When the Communist Army from North Korea invaded the Republic of Korea early on Sunday morning, June 25th, I was living in the city of Seoul and therefore had an opportunity to see something of what happened. What I saw was, of course, only the observation of one person. Furthermore, I am a layman, naturally, in military and similar matters, and therefore you must take with a grain of salt what I tell you. But this is the story as I saw it, and I think that there are some aspects of the situation that you will be interested to know about from a first-hand observer. I had been in Seoul since June 6th on a mission for the United States Department of State. On arriving in the city, which is the capital of the Korean Republic, I had learned that the Korean Minister of Education had asked that I work as a special assistant to him. He then asked me to make a survey of higher education in Korea. And in the 3 weeks which followed, I was very busy traveling about the Korean Republic and visiting their institutions of higher education. At the same time, I occupied myself actively with the making of a color motion picture, which would show something of the family life, the folkways, and the cultural activities of the Korean people. That film, I'm glad to say, I was able to complete, in spite of the fact that there were additional scenes which I would have liked to make. To come back now to the morning of June 25th, when the communists invaded. It was a Sunday. I was living at the embassy building, and I had planned that morning to go out to photograph some additional scenes for this color film which I was making. Unfortunately, though, there was a downpour of rain, and I couldn't get out. So I worked in my room until noon, and at noon went to lunch. During the lunch hour, the day cleared up, and it became bright and sunny. So that at 2 o'clock, I telephoned to our dispatcher to ask whether I could have a car in which to drive to the outskirts of the city where I wanted to do my photographic work. To my surprise, it was an American who answered me. The dispatcher regularly on duty was a Korean. He told me that, unfortunately, I could not have transportation, since there was an emergency, and during that emergency, transportation would be available only for reasons of necessity. When I asked what the emergency was, he said that the communists had invaded all along the 38th parallel. Naturally, this was rather surprising news. The 38th parallel was only 30 miles to the north, and that distance with modern armies is not very great. Furthermore, I had talked only 10 days before to General Roberts, who was the chief of our advisory group to the little army of the Republic of Korea. And General Roberts had said quite frankly that our Korean forces were too small and too lightly armed to be a very powerful army. They were merely a defense force which could protect the Korean Republic from the occasional communist guerrilla raid which had occurred from time to time during the past year or two. With the improvement in the weather, I went out and looked about. Two young Koreans university students came to call on me, and we went for a walk. That night, the news was bad. We were told that the North Korean forces whose strength we did not yet fully realize, had punched through one of the South Korean divisions and were pouring south. Word was sent out, therefore, that the wives and children should come into the embassy building and prepare to leave. And all Sunday night we were busy with the arrival of the women and children and preparations for their evacuation on the following day. Early on Monday morning, before daylight, they were taken in buses to the port of Incheon, about 17 miles away, and there later on Monday were taken aboard two Norwegian freighters which had been requisitioned for the purpose, the freighters which had just discharged their cargoes, and then sailed. General MacArthur had sent fighter planes over to protect the freighters as they were being loaded, and when they got outside of the harbor, they were escorted by destroyers in their two-day voyage to the coast of Japan. The trip which was made by these women and children proved to be a rather difficult one. For example, one of the freighters had accommodations for only 12 people, but had aboard it something like 200 women and children. Most of them stayed on deck as long as they could, but when heavy rainstorms came up, they had to go below. The hatches were battened down, and there they remained in hot, humid weather in a hold from which a cargo of fertilizer had just been emptied at the port of Incheon. Monday morning, we were greatly cheered up by news that the South Koreans, through the use of suicide squads made up of soldiers armed only with the weapons they had, that is, rifles and hand grenades, had attacked Soviet tanks and put them out of commission, and had in this way, and by this desperate means, plugged the hole in the South Korean line. It looked then as if there might be a successful holding at that point. And again, of course, we did not fully realize how terribly the South Koreans were outnumbered and how much superior was the equipment which the North Korean army was using. Because, however, there was this apparent improvement in the news, we suggested that it might look better if we went about our business as we were supposed ordinarily to do. And I propose, therefore, to return to the National University, which is on the outskirts of Seoul, to resume my work on the survey which I was making. Again, however, I was thwarted by the fact that the dispatcher informed me that no automobile could be provided for my transportation. At noon on Monday, while eating in the dining room, which was on the eighth floor of the embassy building, we looked out of the windows and saw four Yak planes. At the time, of course, we didn't realize that they were these Russian-built planes, flying over the hill and swinging in a gentle arc as calmly as though it were an ordinary cruise, out over the railroad station, where in a few moments we heard the explosion of bombs which these planes had dropped. On Sunday, we knew that communist planes had bombed and machine-gunned the airport at Gimpo and had done some damage there. But this was the first chance we had to see such bombing from our location at the embassy building. After lunch, a young Korean who had recently been in the United States for study came to see me, and we went out for a walk, since there was nothing else we could do. I proposed, first of all, that we go to the large department store a few blocks away where there was being held an exhibit of modern Korean art. When we got there, we found that all doors and windows were shuttered and the store was closed because of the emergency situation. So we turned and walked down what is known as the Bonchong, a narrow, long street on which are located many very attractive stores and restaurants, and which might be called the shopping center of Seoul. People were out as usual. There seemed to be no excitement. We stopped in one or two little restaurants and had a cup of tea in order that we might observe how people were reacting. And the general feeling seemed to be one of disturbance, but of optimism. I got back to the embassy building at about 4 o'clock and had hardly more than entered the building when I heard a tremendous clatter outside, and on returning through the lobby to the door, I learned that a Yak, a communist plane, had just flown overhead and had machine gunned the street as it passed in front of the building. There is some doubt whether this was intended intended to intimidate the people of the embassy. It's very doubtful whether the plane was doing more than generally letting off steam with a little ammunition remaining from some other machine gunning mission of more significance. At any rate, so far as we were able to find out, no one was hurt, although it did create excitement for a while. It was after dinner that Monday night, the second day of the invasion, that we learned that the power of the North Korean army had again overwhelmed the South Koreans and smashed through. And it was predicted that the communist army would be in the city of Seoul the following morning. Word was then sent out by the embassy that all women employees were to come to the embassy building, bringing one bag with them, and be prepared to leave. The women employees came in during the hours of the evening, and records were made of the lists of names and so forth, all those formalities that have to be gone through in such a case. At the same time, we were informed that all confidential and secret files would be destroyed, and all files containing the names of Koreans, lest the communists coming in find these names and then single out the Koreans whose names appeared in our files for their special vengeance. So files were taken out and burned. And in addition, the automatic coding machines were carried outside and melted down by the use of thermite bombs, so that there would be no possibility of ascertaining what our codes had been. Radio equipment was similarly destroyed, and we made ready for whatever might happen. Everybody appeared quite calm. I hope that I did, too. I do recall that whenever I wanted to speak, it was necessary to moisten my lips and throat to make sure that I could speak effectively. We were under tension, without a doubt. At 4:30 in the morning of Tuesday, the third day of the invasion, the women employees were loaded on buses, which left them for the Gimpo Airport, 17 miles northwest, where we understood that Army transport planes would come to take them off. They had hardly more than left when the rest of us, the male employees, were told also that we would be evacuated, and that we must therefore pack a single bag, which was not weigh more than 65 pounds, and be ready to leave at any moment. Before daylight appeared, We could see occasional flashes of small arms fire in the hills around Seoul, and we knew that the Communist Army was very close at hand. Finally, at 6:30 in the morning, we were loaded on buses, which took us out to the airport at Kimpo. Remember this, that this airport is northwest of the city of Seoul, so that travel there meant moving toward the communist line, and was a little uncomfortable from that point of view. The travel was made without incident, however. Along the way, we saw at several places Koreans doing guard duty with wooden guns. From the air, an enemy plane might assume that they were armed, or scouts of an approaching army seeing them at a distance would similarly assume that they were effectively armed.